Hi, I'm Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
I want to give special thanks to Fazad and Larry. They helped me quite a bit because I was in a panic, because I was at another meeting at one time and people said they couldn't hear me. So they got me a microphone. So my little girl was taken care of. So thanks so much. I wanted to start by saying this. I read this thing in our daily reader, and I thought that it speaks to what I'm trying to accomplish today. So this is from the daily reader on June 5th. On this day, I will listen carefully to my heart. I will speak up and voice my feelings, knowing that no abandonment is more painful than when I abandon my true self. So my wish for today is to really share my true self, which I haven't done in a large group. So here it goes. I was born and raised in San Francisco, really close to Chinatown. And my father and mother married by marital contract. And my grandfather received monetary funds for that arrangement. And so mom immigrated to the U.S. when she was 16 years old, and my father at 10 years old. And together they had four children. So the first three came right away, and I came along 16 years later after my sister, who was the youngest of the crowd at that time. And right away I felt that I didn't belong just because of the age difference. I didn't have a pal, you know, in the family to hang out with. I was alone because all my brothers and sister left the house as soon as they could, as you can imagine what it was like to live in that household. So there was an unspoken message that I received from my family that I was a mistake and I was unwanted. You know, people made fun of my mother having a child in her 40s. I mean, back then it was unheard of, right, compared to today. My father abandoned our family when I was 2 years old, and my mother blamed me for this. As a small child, I believed her, you know. I mean, mom was my world, right? And only saw him twice in my lifetime after that. Once when I was like 7 years old and he came by and he said he wanted to spend the afternoon with me. And I went with him because this man was my father, but it was a scary visit because this strange man that I didn't know I had to spend the afternoon with. And plus, my mother was in a panic, and I didn't know why until about 10 years ago, my brother told me he was kidnapped by my father from school when he was a young child. So I guess my mother was reliving that thought of me being kidnapped. And so that was my life as a child, so I felt every single piece of my mother's anxiety. I was enmeshed with her feelings. I was her. I didn't have my own feelings. I felt I had no feelings whatsoever. So it was just a time in my life that I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere, and I just had to be her little doll or her little kid, and just did whatever she wanted. And today I am just happy to say that I have freedom of choice now. Somebody mentioned to me, "Oh, purple's your favorite color, I see," and I said, "Yes, it is." And the reason why I love this color is because my mother hated it. She wouldn't allow me. It was banned from my wardrobe. And so now I hate everything that is red because that's what I was forced to wear. My family role was, I was a rescuer. My mom would say, thank God I had her. She saved me from those terrible years. Because my mother was really ashamed that her husband left her. You know, this is, you know, back in the 60s. And she felt less than because she was a single mom at that time. And so I was her little kid that just hung on to her and kept her company, and she was happy with that. And then another time, I rescued my family was when my father passed away. He passed away with the effects of alcoholism at a very young age in the 60s. And his significant other at that time asked the kids, like, you know, please come to the service and say something to honor him. None of my older siblings volunteered. So I came and I did my part as the daughter of my father, whom I never knew, except for that, you know, young age and that visit when I was 7 years old. And so that was my role, one of my roles. The other role is I was an invisible child. I didn't want attention. Somebody mentioned to me it's because my mother was so negative, so I always got negative attention from her. So now I'm sitting there and realizing I didn't want the negative attention, and I just wanted to shrink into the wall, literally shrink into the wall, be as small as possible. That was my survival trait, my skill to live in that household. So it was so funny. One of my fellow travelers was trying to, you know, gather up my group, my Monday night meeting group, to come to hear me speak. And he sent me a text that says, there's a lot of regrets, they can't come. And I said, oh, my invisible child loves that. Yes, he laughed too. But I like to share with you my journey with my 12 steps and my personal experience with them. This idea came to me from Larry when he mentioned last month about Tony's AIDS 12 steps, because he's never really mentioned. I never knew why until Duncan educated me. He says it's because it's a family matter. They never gave the rights to ACA to have it published in the Red Book. So step one, we admitted that we were powerless over the effects of living with alcoholism. And I put in parentheses abandonment and isolation, and that our lives had become unmanageable. When I first came into these rooms for ACA, my life was unmanageable. I really hit a bottom. I lost my boyfriend, a real sudden death. He had a heart attack. And I was so numbed out, I didn't even know I was grieving. I was like a zombie. I had no idea. Couldn't identify my feelings. I believe my heart was broken at that time, and I didn't even know it. I stayed in isolation for over a year. I mean, all I did was work, eat, and sleep, and took care of his trust estate business. and that kept me busy, that kept me going. But by the end of the 12th month, and then as it goes on to another year, I knew it was bad, because for me to go to my condo, have my drapes drawn, like, you know, I'm in a funeral home, and not coming out, and I knew it was bad. So I went back to Al-Anon, because I started Al-Anon some years ago, and I knew that it was a safe place. I sat in those rooms for 6 months without saying a word in the meeting, because I couldn't. I felt that if I said a word, buckets of tears would flow out of my eyes, and I couldn't stop. And I couldn't be hysterical, right? I can't. I had to stuff my feelings. And so it took me 6 months to get used to it again, because I felt like I failed in Al-Anon. You know, I'm on my retreat. I'm coming back, and everybody's making me think I'm, you know, less than, because, you know, I'm coming back on my knees. But no, those people were very loving. They remembered me. They greeted me, and but that's what was where I was, and I realized how bad it was. But looking back at that time, I realized, you know, being in program and doing the red book and the yellow book and the laundry list, is that it was really a bad time for me, because I self-abandoned myself. I just completely left me, and didn't care for me. So it was really bad abandonment. And of course, I felt the physical abandonment of my boyfriend, because, you know, he passed away. So it was just a double whammy. It really was. Step two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could bring us clarity. I love the way Tony A did this, because I always thought that, you know, the regular way, you know, my higher power would restore me to sanity, kind of implies that I was insane to begin with. And I don't like that thought of being insane. But the clarity really helped me understand where Tony A was coming from. And just recently, this year, I discovered that I am codependent, or I was willing to say, to see that I'm a codependent. I mean, I've been in Al-Anon, I've been doing ACA for about 4 years, and now in my fifth year, I'm saying I'm codependent. What gives? How deep is that denial? And the thing was, I was thinking that it was complete loyalty to my family. You know, that was my thinking. And, you know, I sat with that thought, why am I so loyal to this family that's treated me badly? And it came to me, aha, I'm codependent. And of course, you know, acting out all the 14 laundry list traits in hoping that I would receive the love and care and kindness that I wanted. I never got it. And I drilled down more on this clarity part and wrote down our family mission statement. To my surprise, it's a little harsh, but it's the truth. We are to suffer. We do not deserve a kind or gentle life. We are not good enough. We have to work hard because life is hard. We win in the struggle and fight all evil by building walls around us, creating our own castle with a moat. We tell lies to save us from the harsh judgment of society. So as a child, I would lie about my father, that I had one at home, and we had a pretend family unit. My mother supported that thinking and manipulated us not to trust each other. And each of us still remain in our own castle with the moat around us. So the dysfunction continues, because I see it in my niece and her kids. So my grandnephews have the same dysfunction, so that's the sad part. Step three, we made a decision to practice self-love and to trust a higher power of our understanding. I made a decision to do something different by trusting my higher power and letting go of people, places, and things. Step four, we made a searching and blameless inventory of our parents because, in essence, we became them. I love that term, blameless inventory. It's so different from our regular step four. And to reach that point, you know, I had to go through all those worksheets in the yellow book. And to truly understand how the dysfunction was handed down from generation to generation. And through a lot of work, I have compassion for my family now. My mother, my father, my brothers, and my sister. And I see that the pain that they endure, the pain that they're living in, the pain that, you know, they want their life to be better. But yet it's hard for them to understand that there is a better way to live. And then I became so aware of my compulsions and addictions, you know, in this step four. To escape my crazy teenage years, I went to work right away when I was given the legal work permit, because that took me out of the household and away from my mother. And it gave me a sense of freedom that I wasn't under her clutches. So that became my compulsion, is to work a lot, because in my young adult life, I always carried two jobs, working night and day. And I remember driving myself to the ground just working night and day. And now I see why I do it. And I started to attend some meetings in the WA program to understand that compulsion. And it really goes back to, you know, not feeling good enough. I had to prove myself over and over again. So it's still going back to that ism. I am not good enough. And I'm always trying to prove myself, you know, and be perfect. And I'm better at it now. You know, through WA, I kind of log in my time so I can see what I'm doing, and I'll catch myself. So there's a self-awareness now. And it, of course, you know, this year I just discovered that I'm a codependent. And the funny thing was, I attended a CODA meeting 5 years ago, and I sat in that room and I said, "Oh, I can't relate. I don't understand. These people are crazy." And I've been attending Camp Recovery, and it's the ACA and CODA people. Duh. Still didn't sink in. So it takes a long time to uncover those denials. Step five, we admitted to our higher power, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our childhood abandonment. You know, learning to trust another person and tell them my story is really vulnerable because of my upbringing. Like, you know, I had to build that castle with a moat. I mean, I can't let anybody in. God help if somebody knows a little bit about me. So it's really amazing that I can share now from my heart what I think and be confident that my higher power has my best interests. So that's a real amazing thing that I'm able to share now. I'm able to talk and trust. Step six, we're entirely ready to begin the healing process with the aid of our higher power. I like this better than saying for my higher power to remove my character defects. I just somehow don't like that term, character defects. It makes me feel less than. But that's where I say, hey, you know, higher power, help me remove those awful 14 laundry list traits and find a better way to live. Seven, we humbly ask our higher power to help us with our healing process. I like this better than humbly asking him to remove our shortcomings. Shortcomings imply that, you know, I'm less than. You know, I learned these behaviors when I was a kid, an innocent child. So it couldn't be helped. So now I'm learning how to integrate my laundry list traits and have my loving parent come into the scene with gentle and kind thoughts. And my critical parent is taking a lesser role. You know, I thank my critical parent because he was there when I needed him the most, just to live through that childhood phase and just make it on a day-to-day basis. Because it was bad, because I remember when my mother raged at me, I would mutter under my breath, I didn't ask to be born. You know, that's how angry I was. Of course, I couldn't say it to her, right? Because she'll smack me one. Step eight, we became willing to open ourselves to receive the unconditional love of our higher power. To me, willingness is really hard for me because I'm stubborn. I learned how to take care of myself, you know, in a household of no support. So be willing. I had battles with my critical parent, and there were big battles because my critical parent says I'm not lovable. That love was given to me conditionally. If I did this, then I'd get something good. You know, it's not like love was given to me freely. And that's the way my family is, my siblings. It's like whatever I can give them and they're happy, they'll love me. If I didn't give them anything, they cut me off, like, at the knee. And I did experience that with one sibling, so that's sad. We haven't talked for about 30 years or so. But, I mean, she's on her own path, and, you know, everybody has their own path, right? So now I'm learning to understand that my higher power loves me unconditionally. And it's through the people that I meet in these rooms. Because you guys love me unconditionally. You don't judge me. Even though when I throw a fit or cry or carry on or rant and rave and all that stuff. You just hold space for me. You just listen to me. That's the beauty of this fellowship. You know, I can't imagine. And I want to thank those that I know will log into the website and listen to my talk, because I receive many texts from my fellow travelers that are traveling across the country and they can't be here and they wish they could be here. And, you know, I really appreciate that love and care, you know, sending me messages of support. Because I never got that from my family. And I still don't. And the hard part is I have this fantasy that I want my family to be like the Brady Bunch. I want my family to be like Ozzie and Harriet. Why can't I have that? You know, I have to twist my mind and say, that's a fantasy. The reality is you guys. So, you know, this is my family. This is somebody I could count on, you know. I mean, not everybody is available for me, but I know so many of you, somebody out there will be available at the time I need you. So, and that's the beauty of it. I can ask for help. I won't be put down for it. That is so wonderful. Step 9, we became willing to accept our own unconditional love by understanding that our higher power loves us unconditionally. This step is about making amends. And I learned that I have to make amends to my inner child by listening to her. She was the one that I harmed the most. You know, the self-loathing thoughts, the critical parent thoughts. And so I decided that I'll have a conversation with that little girl by using my non-dominant handwriting, as described in the yellow book. And I'd like to share a sample of my writing. How do you feel about your inner child today? That's the question I'm asking her. I feel better. You are listening more. I'm happier. I can feel safe that maybe my needs will be met. I don't want to be run over by people anymore. I have a voice. Please hear me out. I count for something. I am your only kid. You need to take care of me like your own daughter, with kindness and gentleness, as a loving parent would do. That is all I ever wanted. So, you know, I have conversations with my inner kid with the non-dominant handwriting, and it really works. I'm just giving you a good piece of what she said. She tore me up right side and up and down in the beginning because she was that angry. And it wasn't very pretty. And, you know, I talked to a fellow traveler, and they say, well, I said, can't, my left hand must be lying. And she says, no. No. No way. So that was my willingness to look at that exercise and say, okay, I will listen to what my non-dominant hand writes from now on. 10, we continue to take personal inventory and to love and approve of ourselves. I do this by journaling every day. I like to put my inner thoughts on paper because my brain is scattered. And when I put it on paper, it's like a document. So I can flip it back to say, what did I say? What was I thinking about last week? And how is it affecting me this week? So it's a good way for me to kind of keep myself in check. Step 11, we sought through prayer meditation to improve our conscious contact with our higher power, praying only for the knowledge of its will for us and the power to carry it out. I'm not very good at meditation, but I do like to meditate, you know, 10 minutes a day, just on the ACA Serenity Prayer. It keeps me grounded. You know, to understand that I'm the one that has to change. I'm the one that has to take responsibility for my recovery. And just to concentrate on that. And then I wrote a letter from my loving parent to my inner child. It says here, "Dear little Debbie, I will always be with you, rain or shine, good or bad. You will never walk this life without me by your side. I will not abandon you like your parents. You are my precious, treasured child of God. I will always keep your best interests in mind. Pain will come and you may find it difficult, but nothing is going to be for naught. You will learn and you will be wise from learning. You will mentor other women in being a great person and contribute to the world with their own greatness. You are loved by me. I follow you since you were born. Yes, you had some hard experiences. I understand your pain. I cried with you. I hurt with you. Just remember that I love you dearly. I love you, your loving parent. Okay, step 12. We had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and we continue to love ourselves and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I love that term, continue to love ourselves. That's really beautiful. And it brings home the importance of taking care of ourselves and being good to ourselves and loving ourselves. It's a lot of work because the critical parent is always there to battle. Sitting on his shoulder with his yak, yak, yak. So my spiritual awakening comes quietly each day as it unfolds. It's a new way of thinking and a new understanding of my family's dysfunction, you know, their behaviors and how I'm affected by it. And the clarity on how important it is for me to release that dysfunction. You know, be set free to be able to talk, feel, and trust. So becoming my own true self is the hardest task for me, but it's well worth the journey. And, I wanted to, now I can go forward to sharing you my recovery tools. You know, how to stay present and emotionally sober on a daily basis. Because I never know when those laundry list traits will come back and bite me in the butt. Because they will. I mean, I'm triggered every day when I'm at work. So here are some of my tools. Being of service, you know, taking a service position in a meeting, helping out a fellow traveler when they're in need, sharing in meetings, you know, I remember not too long ago I shared in my Monday night meeting that I'm struggling with taking my breaks at work. And to admit to my group that work was my drug of choice. So the next day, one of my fellow travelers texted me and said, "Did you take your break today? Did you take your little walk today? Your 10-minute break?" And it got me into action. That's all I needed. Just that one text. Can you believe that? I mean, that's the kind of service that our fellow travelers do to keep us on track. And then working the steps with a newcomer, you know, it really provides stability and security when they need it the most. They needed a loving hand to help them through some really rough stuff. And there's many ways to do this. It's through sponsorship, co-sponsor, fellow traveler, or by group. I really love the chapter in the Red Book about sponsorship. It gave me so many options. Because one thing I didn't like about other 12-step programs is like, no, get a sponsor, get a sponsor. And I couldn't do that because, well, Tony A said so in his laundry list book. It's because I had parental abuse. I couldn't take authority figures. And the only way I could have worked the yellow book was with a bunch of fellow travelers in a close group. And I could see that I'm growing because I'm willing to say, you know, I'm sponsoring somebody. You know, it's a new term, right? And so that's growth in me to say that. And then the other thing is, as mentioned in our announcements, you know, chapter 8 is a big deal in our Red Book. It's the solution. And though I attended the seminars, you know, Esau's workshops, it's not enough. I have to read it on a regular basis because there's a lot of material in there. It may be a few short pages, but a lot of material, a lot of stuff to process. So it's an ongoing work, because in that chapter it has the critical parent, the loving parent, the inner child, and the higher power thing, you know, the actual parent. And it changes all the time depending on where I am, where my head is. So I have to read that chapter all the time. And then, you know, after doing the yellow book, tried working the laundry list book, because that's where I learned how those traits really affected me, big time. Especially when we're talking about the flip side of the other laundry list. For example, I'll pick my favorite trait, which is trait 10, the laundry list trait of stuffing my feelings. I stuff my feelings so way low that I can't even bring them up. So, you know, I'm undergoing therapy to try to figure out how to bring them up, you know, because it's not good to have them stuffed. And then the other laundry list, it says that I hide my true feelings, and I smile when I'm hurting. So, you know, I'm doing the fake feelings thing. Like, I feel whatever you feel. And then the other part is when we go deeper into recovery, the flip side of the laundry list. We come out of denial about our traumatic childhoods and regain the ability to feel and express our emotions. This is where I'm at. I'm starting to recognize I have feelings. I can express them with safe people. Note, safe people. Okay. And then there's the other corner of the laundry list, the flip side of the other laundry list. This is my goal. We accept we accept we were traumatized in childhood and lost the ability to feel. Under the 12 steps as a program of recovery, we gained the ability to feel and remember and become whole human beings who are happy, joyous, and free. Isn't that something? I can be happy, joyous, and free. It's amazing. I don't need $1 million to get that. And one of my fellow travelers who's been programmed many years, we sat down one day and he just blurted out to me, he says, "This program is for isolationists." And so really, I never heard of that. It's not in the Red Book. And he said, "This is a program of we," and reminded me of step one, that the first word is we, not I. He gave me clarity, the importance of not isolating. So now I'm willing to be vulnerable with my true self, and I can share with my trusted fellow travelers my deepest, darkest secrets and not feel ashamed. And I feel supported. You know, that's the best part. I feel supported. And I'm heard. And so So that's the beauty of that. And, you know, we have very busy lives. I don't know about you, but I'm really busy. So I depend on the new technology. So I text my fellow travelers on a regular basis. Sometimes if I find a affirmation in my daily reader, I'll send it to whoever I'm thinking of that would appreciate it. And that keeps us in touch. We may send each other a text or two about the reading, which is nice. And then I use phone meetings. I had a recent experience where I was vacationing with a brother, and I was out of my element. I was going bonkers. Really bonkers. I felt trapped. I was back in my childhood years. And the only thing that saved me was phone meetings. I wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Is it 6 o'clock in the morning? At 6 o'clock in the morning, just to call into a phone meeting and listen. And I did that for the whole week. And then I remember one Sunday it was so bad, I dialed into a second meeting. The laundry list trait meeting, 4x4 on Sunday. So there is a laundry list meeting on the telephone on Sundays. And it's really nice to hear the language, you know, to hear the fellow travelers. Even though I wasn't able to make outreach calls, at least I outreach with text messages. And it's really comforting. One guy says, "Oh, when are you coming home?" And I tell him, he says, "Okay, have good travels." I mean, it's just a short sentence to say, you know, I care and I'm here for you. It's really comforting. And I make outreach calls routinely now. Before I wouldn't pick up the phone. I would put my name on the phone list and pray nobody calls me. That's that's the truth. Back then, when we didn't have cell phones, you know, we had the answering machine, so I always had the answering machine to warn me who's calling me. And I learned from another person in a 12-step program. She told me that the reason why we make outreach calls is that's your lifeline. You keep it open because you never know when you really need it in your deep crises, because you won't be able to pick up the phone when you're in such a deep doo-doo. So that makes sense. You know, it really does. And then I attend the Promise 7 gatherings that you know, the Ventura County folks put together. It keeps me out of isolation because I like to isolate. You know, I like my downtime. But it's just, what is my intent if I'm isolating or I'm doing self-care? It's just, you know, being aware of what I'm doing is the whole thing about isolation versus self-care, quiet time. And the beauty of the Promise 7 is I have friends now, which my critical parent didn't want me to have. They wanted to keep, my critical parent wants to keep me locked up in a room and never hear a peep out of me. That's my critical parent. And then I like to tell you my camp recovery story, which is a true story. This was in the beginning stages of my recovery. My first time was the scariest time for me, for my inner child. But I survived it. I arrived at camp with my critical parent. I didn't bring my loving parent. So you know how disastrous that was, you know, to have the critical parent in your head throughout the camp time. Thinking that I couldn't trust people at camp, I can't make friends. I didn't know a single person at camp. But my higher power was with me. I got a couple's room. That's mean I have a private room. I didn't have to share bunks. And Madeline came up to me. She says, I know you want a room in the Craig's cabin, but I have something to offer you. How about the couple's room? I said, yeah, sure, I'll take it. She says, well, you have to pay double your registration fee. No problem. So I pay for two campers so I can have a private room. But that's where I was in recovery. I mean, whatever it took. I stayed at camp. I didn't escape or run away. And the funny thing is now, miracles do happen. Now I have many friends at Camp Recovery, and I look forward to seeing them at each camp. And one of the registration people came up to me and said, I'm getting stressed out. Too many people want a room with you, want a bunk with you. I can't deal. God bless him. I see ACA promises working for me now. And I understand where my dysfunctional behaviors came from. It's not my fault. See, I grew up with this thing like, I'm the problem. I cause all this havoc in the family, you know, just because I had this feeling that I was unwanted, you know, cast aside. You know, I wasn't part of the threesome crowd because of the, you know, big age gap. They were gone, raising their own families, getting married, and here I am alone with Mom in her raging and her craziness. And it's just the nature of a family disease. And it's just generational. But I don't have to live out my family's mission statement. I know that now. You know, I can write my own journey and my own future. And today I'd like to read you something from our daily reader today. It says, on this day I will remember that recovery is a journey, that I don't have to take it alone. I will trust other ACAs who will also seek the truth to help me. I am not alone. My trusted fellow travelers have my back with my higher power guiding me. So this is where I'm at. I'm trusting my family of choice to carry me through my years forward. I don't have to look back. Now, I mean, yes, the laundry traits are going to come back and bite me in the butt, but the difference is, now I can talk about it, I can call somebody and rant and rave, and then in the end they're going to say, well, what's your solution, right? To be my own loving parent. So that is my story, and I really, has been a joy in experiencing the whole journey. There was a lot of loss and grief in my life, and as I was putting this talk together, it was hard for me to revisit all that loss and all that grief. But I'm happy that I did it. Thank you.